Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. Today we are going to cover reinventing yourself. This will be the fourth time I've recorded this video. The first couple times I had technical difficulties. One, I lost the video. Second one, the audio went off because I had forgot to plug in my machine because it was on a rainy day. And I had set the machine up in the house and forgot to put the power supply in. And then I finally recorded it, third time, and I thought it was total crap. So now I've had a chance to think about it a little bit, especially after watching the horrible edit yesterday. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to create a graphic on this video. If you're coming through audio, I'll just try to keep it organized for you. But if you watch this through YouTube, I'm going to make a graphic that basically says physical, mental, spiritual. And wherever I am in the equation, that little bar, part of the legend, is going to be lit up. So that way, if you tab the playhead and you want to get to spiritual, you don't have to listen to the other two sections, and vice versa, of course. Before we get into the different sections, let's just go over why you would reinvent yourself. Why would you listen to this video? Why would you listen to some random guy on the internet, you know, talk about such a thing? I think what it has to do with is essentially twofold. One, you just need a random change. You're tired of the patterns that you observe. I always tell people that, you know, regardless of how good looking you are or whatever, you look in the mirror every single day, you see every single flaw that you have, and regardless if you like the way you look on most of the days, at some point in time, you're just going to go, damn, I'm tired of looking at this face. But there's nothing we can do, unless you're going to go under the knife, which is what I think, you know, people like Michael Jackson did. Please don't do that. But, you know, our face is are one part of the equation, but who we are and who we behave like is a whole different set of standards, right? So pure mathematical change is just sometimes what we desire. The second side of it is the other obvious side of it, which is where they have the whole section inside the bookstore called self-help. We want to improve ourselves through reinvention. How can you be a better person? And it could be that you're a better person overtly to other people, and it could be that you're a better person internally, perhaps more enlightened. Perhaps it's just, I want to see more of the universe. When I open my eyes, I want to pierce the reality a much deeper. I want to have a wider frustum angle, right, so I can suck in as much of the universe as possible. That's what I try to do every day. You guys that watch the show with me, you're helping me to accomplish that goal in myself, and I never knew that. That's what was going to happen when I started doing these things. There's something called the Hawthorne Effect. I was taught this as a really young child. And the Hawthorne Effect had to do with the fact that when people were going to work in the 50s and 60s, when they had finally convinced humanity to sit inside of a building in big rows, you know, and work for a corporation, which is a sad day. I think this is probably serendipitous, meaning accidental, you know. Somebody rearranged the cubes that everyone was in. They essentially changed, and then all of a sudden productivity went up in the room. I'm like, oh, that's weird. Must have been some coincidence. And they got this down to a science by studying it and studying it. And what they realized was that just a tiny percentile of change in the human pattern of the mind gave the illusion to the employees that someone cared about them. I also think it has to do with being excited that there's a new pattern to look at, right? Once you rearrange people in a business, people meet people that never met people before. Oh, you come home and like, you know, my roommates are, my cube mate is a different person now, and da-da-da-da-da, and he or she has this and that. And it's exciting. So I highly recommend it if you own a business to pull that off, right? Let me tell you, that same effect goes for you. It goes for the interior of who you are. A lot of people who get caught up in causes, they wake up with a different purpose. And as I said in my love episode, purpose is love. And so they love their life because they have a new purpose, a new cause. Now, unfortunately, if the person is not highly educated or enlightened or wise, they tend to grab onto Kone 2012 crap, right? Climate change. They need no science. They just need a feeling. And then they run off and chop babies' heads off because they're doing it in the name of the crusades of the modern age, right? Always have to give some crazy reference there for you. So let's get into physical, because we're going to do this in physical, mental, and spiritual. And sort of the headers or the taglines for each one of those areas is, one, physically, you know, experiment with what you look like, because you may not have found the way that you look, the best way that you can look. Mental is going to be about how you form thoughts on a daily basis and interpret your world. And then spiritual is how open-minded you can be to see the universe and how you probably relate to it on a spiritual level, way outside of your way outside of your mortal coil. You know, acknowledging a symbiotic relationship that you might have with a higher force that is your soul. Well, let's do physical. How many of you, when you do your laundry and you get it all situated and it's the best day you've done your laundry, you've completely folded everything up, you've pressed whatever shirts and pants or whatever it is you got, or your boots and your shoes, whatever, lined up, and the very next day is an awesome freaking day because you go up to that closet of yours, that shoe, whatever, and you can look the very best that you can look on that particular day. You get to pick the very best things. And they're clean, and you know you just look tight, your dress or whatever. And you go out, and you just feel like $1 million. That's sort of what we're going to be talking about in terms of this physical segment. Now, the physical segment starts like this. Most of us have serendipitously, accidentally occurred, you know, come to this moment of where we are right now and what we look like. We didn't choose what we look like. We just bumped into it. Some people, they've never thought about their hairdo. They've never thought about their clothing. If you have, well, let's put it this way, if you're 35 and up and you have Facebook and you've got the standard couple hundred friends from your high school or whatever, I guarantee you, you've got that one person who has never changed their hair since high school, right? I'm 46 years old, all right? For me to have someone in high school be my friend on Facebook and still look like 1985, that's really sad. And, you know, I guess you could say if they looked absolutely fantastic at 85 and it still works today, then I wouldn't say that. But this isn't fantastic. This is like a freaking high hair. It's a woman who looks exactly like she did back in the day. And, you know, it's not technically speaking a sad thing. It's just, you look at that person and you see what you believe to see is the inside of them also being in stasis in 1985. Every opinion that you had in 85, you assume that she's got a time capsule, the same opinion and the same outlook on life, which in some cases could be great because maybe she didn't get into the darkness of other eras. And I really shouldn't stress that it's wrong, but I just think that, you know, if I'd seen her experiment a little bit away from the 80s and then come back to the 80s, that'd make me feel a little more comfortable. Not so, that thing didn't happen, right? Now, most of you have experimented with the way you look already. For those of you who haven't, which I probably are very few of you, it can be an extremely exhilarating thing. I grew my hair out twice in my life before I grew it out for the last time. And I've talked about this in several episodes, but I need you to understand that I do look really good in short hair. I'll probably end up going back. I started a new business, and I thought, well, maybe I'll cut it off after my first million. And then it'll just be a little goal. Because even though I like the way this looks, and I'll explain more about that in a second, maybe I should just change just to renew my own brain to really look at the world a different way. But I had grown my hair out a couple times and I just, you know, I don't know why, but I didn't have it cut in a way that it is today. And so it just looked feminine. Or it looked sort of looked Patrick Swayze the first time I did it, and then it looked feminine the second time because this person kept cutting it at a wedge. I was like, what are you thinking? What am I? The trick was not to get it cut ever. That was the trick, right? I get my hair cut once a year. You know, once every 6 months if I'm just feel like doing it, but it's usually once a year. But when I grew it out the last time, which was really around 2007, it was a complete mistake. I was just really, really busy starting my other company and making tons of money, and I'm just busy, and I just kept letting it grow and letting it grow, and finally it got down to this, and I thought, man, I looked in the mirror, and I said, geez, this really feels like me as a human being. And what's strange about it is that for me, short hair is what you assume children to have. And long hair is sort of, you know, your hippie kind of thing. And when I finally grew my hair out, I felt like this Celtic Valhalla feeling of this is the way my ancestors did it. And this is the way my face is shaped to do this. It's shaped to have this hair. It's really strange, right? I just felt more myself. And I could kick myself for not doing it when I was younger. So I want you to consider changing yourself physically as being a potential moment to find a whole new feeling and a whole new alignment with your identity internally, be it cutting short hair long hair, you know, short hair growing it out, changing your wardrobe. But now let me talk about some of the things that I think that people miss and some of the faux pas that I see constantly with people dressing themselves. And yeah, I almost want to say this is specifically a white person thing because white people just don't get it. I swear to God. But we have two different types of fashion, right? That is, and we're not going to get into the gender things of men dressing like women or women dressing like men. That's your choice, whatever. We're just going to talk about the physics of it, the basics of it. You can dress tight or you can dress loose. And you can dress really, really tight and you can dress really, really loose. I watched loose occur in the 90s. But I also watched, you know, myself wearing really tight jeans in the early 80s. Consequently, you know, the women noticed my ass way more back in those days. The pattern that you are putting on your body is the pattern by which you attract life, right? So if you wear a tight pattern on your body, it's typically, and I don't mean like necessarily the literal translation of tight clothing to your skin, like a capri pants for some young man. What I really mean is you're a sharp dressed person. You're neat. You're together. If you put jewelry on, it's perfectly balanced and color balanced with the other clothes that you have on. If you're a man, it's your tie and how your bow tie or whatever. It's your suit. It's not having silt all over your you know, clothes that are supposed to be just iced down beautiful, right? When you go out like that, you definitely show and you will feel the level of order around your body, and you will exude that order in everything that you do. Now, because any extreme could be dangerous, all right, you may want to flex a little bit. If you watch the old Twilight Zones, there's an old episode, and I think it's called Willoughby, and it's a guy that goes to work, and he's got a boss that's just really pushy, and he's always saying, push, 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 because he's trying to tell him to, you know, get the sales down, get the sales estimates up and, you know, ice down. And so everything's really organized and really pushy. And, you know, life is more chaotic than that. And the human nature, the human soul is more chaotic than that. At the same time, let's go with loose. Loose can have a lot more, in my experience, it can have a lot more negativity attached to you more often because people will think that you're loose with your commitments in the world. Now, everything I'm talking about in terms of the clothing that you put on, it's sort of also the internal physical nature of your body, right? So if you are fit, the people will look at you and think certain thoughts about your discipline, especially the more you're over 30 and over 40. They know it's very difficult to stay fit over 30 and 40 with our current food supply, right? If you're loose, then they assume that you have, you know, become susceptible to comfort food, and they would assume that your level of discipline is not quite so high, unless you can demonstrate it otherwise, right? There's plenty of very obese people that are extremely successful and extremely productive at what they do. But there's something to be said about, you know, seeing someone extremely fit and on their game. You know, I'll give you a personal experience of mine. If you watch all the episodes, you will have found out that I work with LL Cool J for about a year, and then I approached him a few years later after that with another business proposal. This guy's tight, all right? He wears straight up, you know, urban clothing that I think he has designed. I think he's like 6 foot, 6 foot one. He feels like he's 7 feet tall. And last time I had a meeting with him in LA, I was in his office sitting down maybe like, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes before he got there. And he comes around the corner. And the brother works out, let me just tell you that much. And he is, you know, it's interesting to see one of your heroes when you were a kid. But this guy comes around the corner and he just exudes inspiration for someone like me. Head to toe, absolute, you know, masterpiece of like physical chiseling. His clothing is tight. Everything on him is tight. His couple pieces of jewelry he has in his ears are super tight. You know, he always wears some really cool glass sunglasses, which aren't completely ridiculously Roy Orbison, but just enough to kind of set the tone, right? And then he's a gentleman, and he's brilliant as a human being. He's actually just so exceptionally brilliant. I think he's scientific brilliant, as well as every other thing. And I've said it before, when they actually took all the rappers that have ever existed and totaled up their unique vocabulary, Cool J beat Eminem by a mile. Can you believe that? And the reason why I say that is because Eminem raps so damn fast, you think he's sticking more words in there. But the individual word quality, there's only about two or three guys over a Cool J, which is weird. If you listen to Cool J, he seems so simple and classic, you know, which I think is brilliance, right? So just keep that in mind as your general thrust. You're either tight or you're loose, but you will be judged based on the algorithm that you warm up to. Now, the cool thing, too, is you can mix them together, right? Sometimes you're going to have the lower half of your body be loose and the top half of your body be super tight. Girls do it all the time when they wear, like, sweats or something, and then they wear a really nice sort of fit top, and it just looks cool. Guys, I don't know if we do that or not. I do not. I try to be as kind of medium to tight, you know. But I got my little uniform, my t-shirts and my jeans and stuff. But when I dress up, I've got some button-downs, of course. Now let's talk about some things that white people do. But I'll tell you one thing nerds do in general, all races. For some reason, nerds are unaware that they have a mortal coil. It's a weird thing. They are more aware that they have an avatar in some freaking massive multiplayer online game than they do their own bodies. They get up in the morning and do not touch their hair. And they will go to work and they will go to school. And their hair is absolutely the way it was when they went to bed. They actually believe that they can shower the night before and save some time in the morning. Don't do that. Doesn't work. They will take a watered up t-shirt that may be clean, maybe not. But it was dried in the dryer and it sat in the dryer and it's all wadded up and they pull it out. Looks like a pack of unravel tinfoil, and they'll put it on and go to work. Unbelievable. But because they're so smart, they don't lose their jobs quickly. But in the end, as an employer, let me just tell you, I worry about these people because I need them to be omnipresent. I need them to be aware of everything that they're touching and everything that they're doing. And I need them to have pride, and I need them to polish what they create if we're going to be together, right? Remember, Steve Jobs always said he only hired A players. And what he meant was people that were as good at what he does as what they do, right? Whatever they're being hired for. And he says, B players. If you ever stumble on a B player, he goes, B players hire D players. And it's because they don't know what they're doing, and because they always want someone to be less than them. They don't get off on people being as smart as they are. So be an A player for an A player. And when you get a chance to hire people, work your ass off to hire other A players. But these are some of the visual indicators you can use to figure out whether or not you're dealing with an A player, right? Now, I talked about hair. I just want to talk about a few faux pas that we do when we reinvent ourselves physically, right? We want to change your hairstyle. What do? We go look online. We go look in magazines. We look at some famous person. And we say, oh, God, I just want their haircut. Just give me their haircut. And you bring the little picture in on your iPhone or whatever to your hairstylist. And they look at you and they look at the picture. And they groan inside because they know that you, if you're doing that, you have no concept of how hair works. Your head's a different shape. Your calyx are in different places. Your hair follicle density is different. And there's no way they're going to be able to shape your hair like the one in the phone. And when they get done cutting all your hair off, they're going to look in the mirror and it will not look anything like what you asked for. And then they're going to try to hope that you just randomly say, what was your idea? Like it. Just understand, you're a unique human being. I can't make my hair like yours. You may not be able to make your hair like mine. It is a very fun thing to play with if you have some, because it grows back, you know. Another big one is if you wear glasses or if you want sunglasses. I will tell you that the more that you grab trends, the more ridiculous you look. We used to have Oakleys, right? Oakleys are, for some people, the pinnacle of all eyewear, the Lamborghini of all eyewear. But once it starts getting sold at Walmart, you can pretty much assure yourself that the world's going to wear them. And if you want to express yourself, you might want to search a little bit deeper than that. The glasses that I'm wearing in this show are called Persol's. And that's not a unique brand anymore. But back in the early 90s, I found Persol's. And they were not internationally distributed. Definitely not in America. Exotica finally bought a license, I think, in the early 90s. But I was dealing... I found these glasses. I searched long and hard for these. My uncle's an optometrist, so I was able to get a hold of things. But I think I found a celebrity wearing these. And I simply asked what... I found out who was making these glasses. I can't remember how I did it. So I contacted the distributor in Florida. Miami, Florida, I believe. He owned the whole thing. He sold the license to Exotica, and that's how we got Persol's in every single store. I got Persol's back 25 years. I think that at times their designers are phenomenal. For me, glasses are a big deal. They shape your face. They shape the way people look at you. Optometrists have given me many opportunities to use contacts. Besides my uncle saying they scratch the lens of your eye, and you'll have fuzzy vision after 20 years of using contact lenses, which is why he's never used them in his life, and he's in his 80s. Glasses shape your face. They add geometry to your face, right? But your head has a shape, right? Your head has a width. And when you buy glasses, you need to make sure that you are getting glasses that are shaped for your skull. Now, some people get them too small, and so the temples, which are these side pieces, go way in toward your nose, which makes you look like you have a fat head, regardless if you do or not. And then some people get the novelty glasses, right, which are the big, tiny, big, huge glasses, and so the temples go out. You pretty much want these things to be pretty straight. You want the lenses not to be too tall in your head, right? Unless you're trying to make that statement. Now, women, you've got some options. You can get some really massive glasses, but then you'll look like 60-year-old fashion designers. If that's what you want to look like, then knock yourself out. Another thing is that your face is either chiseled or it's round. And this is before any weight comments. So if you have an exceptionally round face, I like to suggest to those individuals, my friends, that you consider getting very straight, chiseled glasses. Like, these are pretty chiseled. I have a very chiseled face. So what I've done is I've complemented my face with more chiseling, right? I did the round thing back in the late 80s, the polo glasses thing, and I look like a total douche. So I'm done with that. I went straight glasses probably in 91 or 92. And I had to, again, search around the world to get them because no one was wearing them. I think Elton John was the only guy that showed up with a pair of full-on rectangular glasses. But he was, like, one of the only people doing it. And so I've been chiseled for a really long time. I just dig it. So I want you to think about it. The other one is that if you are older, you've experienced the lightening of your eyebrows, most likely. Some of you ladies just simply lose your eyebrows, right? When you wear glasses as opposed to contact lenses, it just depends on if you can pull it off, right? If it looks good for you. Your glasses will add back the geometry at the top of your head. Now, mine simply got bushier and lighter. It's weird. So when I wear glasses, though, it gives me back some of the youth that I used to have from having the darker eyebrows thing, right? And I refuse to color them, of course. Now, while I'm on it, I'm just going to mention one of the things that I've seen in professionals even. This is like just a pet peeve from me to the audience here. White leather shoes. You better have a license to wear those things, all right? It better totally match your clothing. Because white people, we are absolutely stuck in the past when it comes to white leather shoes. I live in Los Angeles, and so I see a lot of motorcycles. I live in Orange County, and we have motorcycle gangs all over the place, like crotch rocket gangs, and lots of Harley riders and all that kind of stuff. And the amount of dudes that I see driving around with white leather shoes is unbelievable. The 20-year-old jeans with white leather shoes, wow, seriously. Talk about a brain that is running Windows 95, you know? So, let me just remind you. If you go off and buy the big fancy Corvette or the big Bentley, you need to get clothing that matches the car, all right? If you're going to ride a Harley Davidson, you don't go out with shoes, okay? If you got laces on your shoes and you got a motorcycle between your legs, you have failed, all right? Go get some Fry boots. Go get the harness 15Rs, you know? Don't go buy Harley Davidson brand shoes, right? That just makes you a tool. Go get Fry's. Original Civil War boot designed in 1865 or 1860, right? Man up, all right? I was at an Iron Maiden concert, just to give you an example of how pathetic this has gone. One, Judas Priest's lead singer is Rob Halford. I'd seen Rob Halford do a solo show. Unbelievable, too. 60 years old, hitting notes that I can't hit them, right? And I can hit pretty high notes. Okay. Then I saw him on Judas Priest's tour. And he's going out, and he's dressing in total crazy black capes and stuff. And the whole thing is 100%. Rob Halford knows what he's doing. Head to toe. Plays the character. You believe you're looking at some rock opera, right? But then I go to Iron Maiden, and the lead singer has been swapped out, but he's been swapped out for so long, he's considered the lead singer. And Iron Maiden, if you haven't seen their concerts, they have gigantic props. I mean, massive 20-foot, busts of Eddie and a bunch of other stuff. This guy comes out on stage wearing a big black cape, sort of an interesting outfit. It's sort of like some pirate outfit that Adamant wore 30 years earlier. But what's he doing? He's wearing white leather shoes. White leather, I think they were Converse or something, but the low tops stuck out like a sore thumb. He is the Harley Davidson riding guy with his khaki shorts, black socks, and red shoes. It was just pathetic. And that's what white guys do. It's crazy. One last thing about the physical. Now, it's a bit of a touchy subject, of course, and I've mentioned on the show because I've gone through at least one huge state change of this thing, which is your weight. Now, it's something that we don't say, but let me just say that, your weight plays into the people's judgments of you, right? Now, again, if you show up well-articulated, tightly dressed, all that good stuff, no one's going to care. I work with movie producers that were whales, and even though they always wanted us to eat cookies during the meetings, it's really strange, but as long as your game's tight, they'll judge you still. But then they'll unjudge you as you start to perform and show them that, it's results that matter. So I don't want you to worry too much about what other people think about you. In fact, I really don't want you to think about that at all. It's going to happen, so I'm not going to be a purist, right? But here's the thing. you know, I've mentioned several times on the show, there was a point when I gained probably 25 pounds, right? I was probably about 185 or between 185 and 190. And for my size, that's ridiculous. Let me just tell you some stuff that I experienced when I got heavy, just in case this has remnants of what you might be experiencing now. I got heavy, and, you know, it's like a bodysuit that you wear head to toe, right? It grows on your chest, it grows on your gut, grows on your back, grows on your hips, everything, right? I get it right here in my neck, so I can just look in the mirror and go, holy crap, time to stop eating so much, work out more. But I got a layer of fat on my chest. And what I noticed was I would sit on my sofa and I would just get tired looking straight at the television. And I could just, and I don't sleep that well, you know, because my brain won't shut off. And I would just be able to fall asleep staring at the TV. I got relatives that are 60 pounds overweight and they ride in the passenger seat of my car. And they could just fall asleep staring straight ahead. And they'll fall asleep for 1 minute and then wake back up in the conversation. And it's all because of that big plate of fat on their chests, right? So that's the first thing I noticed. The second thing that happened was that I started snoring, which actually ended up wreaking havoc on the relationship that I was in. We ended up sleeping in different rooms because I snored all of a sudden. And I tried to understand this from a conventional standpoint, and I realized that something was happening that we don't really talk about, which is that you gain weight on the inside of your body as much as the outside of your body. Not as much, but you do gain on the inside. So every single tube that I'm using to breathe is getting heavier as well. How could it not, right? Obviously, your body stores fat in various segments of your body, so probably 90% is on the outside, but just that little bit on the inside, laboring to move the giant chest back and forth. But there's something in the nasal canal of the body when you get heavy, because once I lost the weight, I stopped snoring, right? I know people that have had surgeries on their throats. I've had friends that have elongated their jaws to hopefully, all this crazy weird shit because doctors are trying to figure it out. I know people with breathing machines that have been able to put the breathing machine away once they lost their weight. Got a very good friend of mine who had a pot belly. He no longer has it. He still uses his machine, but he's not sawing logs like he used to. When you do lose the weight, because it will sneak up on you. Some of you may have it snuck up on you really young and you've had it your whole life. But if it's a desire of yours, and if you don't care, hey, don't listen to this part of it. But if you can shed that weight, I guarantee you the mental freedom that you will feel is almost like being reborn. And I'm not exaggerating. It's almost as if God himself came down, hit you with the magic wand, and you feel like you dodged a bullet, like you went down to near death and came back. It's almost that feeling, which is odd because you don't notice that you're even the slightest bit discontent with your form until you reshape yourself, you know? My technique for doing this, I want to share it with you, is that I did it sheerly by accident, but I've done it twice now, and I no longer have to do it. I've done it for a year. And I mentioned this, I think, a long time ago on a show. What I did was I barely ate for 2 days, and I made it Monday and a Tuesday. I took aspirins to make sure that I wouldn't get headaches, right? Now, I did eat. I just didn't eat a lot, and obviously hydrate the hell out of yourself with liquids, right? If you want to go to like a juicer regimen and just drink shakes for two days, that's probably a way to do it, and you probably won't get so headachey, right? But what that did was it shrunk my stomach. So by the time I got to Wednesday, I did one thing. I simply ate small portions until I felt like I was full. Instead of listening to how great this stuff tasted, I simply said, am I full yet? Am I full yet? Am I full yet? And I ate it slowly and I paused. And would you believe it? After a third of my meal, I was completely full. And there's videos now that tell you to do this on the web, which is funny. It's a couple that have went around Facebook recently. Take the rest of the food home and eat it later. But now I eat really one big meal a day, and that is it. And the funny thing is that I bumped into several of my friends who are now surprisingly fit. And I say, you know, I only eat one meal a day. And they go, yeah, me too. You know, we eat other stuff, but we graze the rest of the day. Or we eat some of the leftovers. And it really doesn't matter what time of day you eat your food. Everyone's like, well, if you eat your food and go to bed, da, 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 da. Well, nah, you're probably just eating too much throughout the day. But you need your energy when you're living your day. So my thing is to say, probably getting a breakfast or a lunch, depending on how you wake up and all that stuff, is probably one of the better things. I like to do lunch because in the middle of the day is really when you're conscious and you're chewing up calories and you're turning it into your productivity. And then at night, you're sort of chill and relaxed. And if you can eat a little bit of your leftover from lunch, it's cool. But for those of you over, say, 45 or 50, if your employment is not steady, then you want to keep your appearance pretty intact. Because people are going to judge you for a bunch of book cover reasons, and the last thing you need is anyone judging you for your size. You know, I've got a relative that lost his job in his 50s and pretty much couldn't get steady employment for 10 years. And every single day that he was upset, he just ate, you know, until he got himself so overweight that when he walks in the room, people are like, yikes, dude. You know, if this is what you do to your own temple, then what are you going to do for my business? So just keep it in mind. I want the very best for you. Now, the other thing that I want to say for physical, and I'm just going to make a reference and then we'll go on to the mental, is that we have a companion website that I talk about from time to time called onepagenews.com. There is a link up there that says recommended path. Click that and then click immediate health risks. And in that article, it's just a text article, make sure that you're familiar with every one of the subject matters in there. I'm sure most of you are, but if you're not, go and read the paragraphs. If something is seemingly crazy, you're like, what? Cell phones? Microwave ovens? Read the paragraph before you roll your eyes and go poison yourself to death. My opinion is this. If you're a good person, not perfect, but you're a good person, and you're trying to spread the truth in the world, we need you around. We need your kids around. We need you to multiply. And so this is an effort to keep you as healthy as possible. You know, if you know anyone who's suffering from cancer or you're dealing with it, make sure and watch the episode on cancer. Make sure and research all these amazing cures for cancer. And have faith in them, because the world was built balanced, right? The world's food supply was built to never cause cancer. Unless, again, you're sleeping on top of a uranium motherlode in Africa or something, right? But most of the world does not cause cancer. The sun doesn't cause remotely as much cancer as they say. But once dermatology was invented as a sport, okay, where people could charge you money for it, all of a sudden there was skin cancer on everybody. Crazy. Now, mental. Boy, you know, that could be a big subject, right? Now, what's the difference between mental and spiritual? Mental is sort of your conscious thinking, your conscious ability to process thoughts, your conscious approach towards various subject matters in your life. Well, we're talking about reinventing yourself. So everything that we're talking about is going to be the delta between what you're thinking today and how you're thinking today and where you could possibly think tomorrow or in the next 2 seconds. Now, I'm going to share with you a mental thing that I think is very important that I always share with my employees, and it becomes my goal as a manager or as a CEO with all my employees and all my friends, which is to align your outsides with your insides, really dictating it from your insides out. So you have desires and things that you love, art that you love, things that you want to do for a living, how you want to spend your life, either with people, without people, collaborating, not collaborating, because maybe you're inundated by people. Maybe you want to physically live in the tropics. Maybe you want to go live up in the Alps, whatever. The goal of life is to make a list of everything that your internal desires are, and then take every step you possibly can on the outside to make sure that when you wake up in bed, you want to pop up out of bed and go conquer life. When I do one-on-ones with my employees, and if any of you have employees, this is a great regimen to use with them. You say, what makes you pop out of bed? You know, you've had one of those mornings while you've worked for this particular company, hopefully, where you popped out of bed and you were simply thrilled to be alive. You were thrilled to go to work and just eat up the tasks. And what was that day like? And what were those tasks like? And I get them to share their insights with me. And then that's essentially them giving you the thread out of the sweater. And if you're astute, you just start yanking on that thing. And you start doing almost like a like a psychologist would do a reflection session with a human being, you simply start saying, well, does that connect to this, connect to that, connect to this, connect to that? And then you as a manager, or if you're privileged enough to run your own company, you start looking at the tasks inside the company that this person seems to want to do. And there's two ways of looking at that. And this is, I'm using an employee, abstracting it away from you, but I'm really talking about you. So please don't get lost in this analogy, right? But the idea is that there are specific tasks. Someone might say, I love whittling wood. Nothing else but wood. And that's a very specific way to interpret a desire, right? But the second way to interpret that might be they like to create things by sculpting. They like using their hands, right? So your goal at a fundamental level in the mental sector is exactly that, to align everything in the outside of your world with the inside desires of who you are. Now, as I mentioned in the physical side of things, our mental desires are often simply serendipitously collected over the years and not thought out. So you need to probably, before you go through this exercise, audit who you think you are, which is hopefully every other episode of Deep Thoughts up to this point. You've heard it, the ones related to creativity and, you know, who you are as an individual. The episodes like ego, integrity, double standards, morality, all that stuff, right? And once you know what your insides are, and you've determined that those are the things you want to keep, then you're ready to rock and roll. Light the fuse on this rocket because you're about to go where you want to go. Now, give yourself some time as well, right? You may not be able to make every single change overnight, and don't persecute yourself. It just takes time. And some of that's the fun part in the whole game, right? Now, let's talk about the way that you communicate mentally with other people. I've got a whole episode on communication. I got a whole episode on networking. Please go watch all those because this is just going to touch on that. But we're talking about reinventing ourselves. I grew up in a family with a dad who is much more chill nowadays, but you know, life was tough at times. And you know, he would vocally express himself a lot about that. And he seemed like, you know, I would just say he was cynical at times in his life. Again, today he's much better. But when you're trying to figure out the rules that rule you and no one's answering those questions for you, it's extremely frustrating to lose opportunities in life. And I went through the same thing. And so when I moved to California, I brought what I was taught to California, which was essentially to vocalize cynicism. And then I calmed down and I matured. As we communicate with the outside world, we have to understand sort of what frequency that we're exuding. And I will tell you personally that the most that I've ever learned in this particular area is probably about 1999 and up, when I started working with my childhood idols in various film and music. And either, you know, most cases, everyone's really chill. And you just hang out with these really cool people and you realize, oh my gosh, you know, they're dealing with things that are as difficult, if not more difficult, than the things I'm dealing with. And they're relaxed about it. And when everything hits the fan, they stay relaxed. And I realize that's cool, you know, with a capital C. And I want to be that kind of person. On other occasions, I've dealt with individuals with the same privileges in life who are very cavalier, very cantankerous, very cynical. And I watched the loyalty around them diminish at times, right? Typically, we're all pretty good true blue friends, but you know, people kind of go, well, I can't hang out with him. He's really in that bad mood right now, and he's going to be that way for months. And I'm always helping people in their moments of despair when it comes to these situations. And so I would get involved by request to help out. And so I've seen my past echoed in my future through individuals and say, man, I used to be just like that. Wow, that's the way I was viewed by others, most likely. And you'll end up looking back and saying, wow, I've got some amazing friends who tolerated me when I wasn't so great. And maybe we were all immature together and I was just simply talking their lingo. Now, I think overall, you can be pretty darn cool in your life and still just have these acidic moments. So you want to go in and make sure that you don't have to express any emotion / frequency that's negative in your life, no matter what. Because remember the Law of Attraction episode, whatever you do exude is what's going to be attracted to you. So you must be careful. So one of the things you want to mentally do, and this is sort of crossing the line between spirituality and mentalness, you have to get yourself happy. Now I'm going to give you a couple silly things, each one of these categories, maybe not spiritual, but we'll find out here. One of the things that I used to do just to keep life spicy, just a difference, and it's I think it's more mental than anything else, but it sort of has a physical element to it as well, is that I would change my handwriting. It's a very interesting experience because you have to think differently about every letter in the alphabet. And one of the things I've mentioned a couple times is I've gone back to cursive. And oh, Lord, is it hard. I mean, I'm an artist, and I look down at my cursive, and sometimes I'll create a masterpiece word, and other times it's like I'm writing a doctor's prescription with bad handwriting. But I used to do this once a year, probably since about the age of 9. And then I finally slowed down. But now, again, I'm doing cursive. And my regimen is if I, because it's just personal notes to myself, obviously, but my regimen is if I'd write a word and it doesn't come out correctly, I immediately scratch it out with one line and then write it again. And I'll write it again. I'll do it 50 times until I get it perfectly correct when I have the time. So you might try that little trick to kind of juice up your brain a little bit. Again, most of the stuff's related to happiness, you know, and feeling congruent with your insides. So those are little just tchotskis you might try because it might trigger something else in yourself. Mental. Communication. I've got a whole episode on it. But the short and dirty is you want to be able to articulate exactly what you're thinking. To the degree you learn other words, perhaps, or learn to put them together a little bit better, you will feel more comfortable that people understand what you're saying. And I will tell you that, again, that you know the survey is that if you just graduate high school in America in an average school, your vocabulary counts 1,200. If you graduate from a four-year degree, your vocabulary is 2,200. Doesn't even double, right? Your average Civil War soldier who went to school for 8 grades and was taught in a little tiny farmhouse without any Common Core overlords had a 12,000-plus vocabulary. Which is why it takes scholars to read letters from people with 8th grade level educations. We are not smarter nowadays, all right? By a long stretch, just because you can reference someone else's pop science definitely doesn't make you smart. Like I said, the movie Casablanca is 176 pages, but the movie is acted in under 120 minutes. In Hollywood, a page is a minute, so 176 page script should be 176 page or 176 minute movie. But again, this is under 120 minutes. It's 90-something minutes. Go watch it. We used to be smarter. We used to be able to talk quicker and understand language faster. Now we're dumbed down. So let's get back to that level of articulation. Writing poetry is one of the ways that you can master your language. And forget, if poetry sounds a little foo-foo for you, then just write lyrics to songs. Now I guarantee you, unless you have an epiphany that you've been holding back, your first 6 months or so is going to be pathetic. Maybe even your first year. I think my first year was utterly horrible, if not the first couple years. Now I've generated, I haven't written in quite a while, but I did, you know, like I said, about 500. And I've shared them with people of my age, and they love them. They absolutely love them. And I made it. And those poems are, gosh, 15 plus years. Some of them are 20 years old. So I wrote them in my 20s, and I can impress a 40-year-old person today with them. That can be you. And believe me, when you construct an email or when you speak, you'll be able to see your thoughts and do this. You know, what am I doing? I'm talking for an hour to 2 hours a pop without a teleprompter, right? Our president can't even do that, right? Let's go to spiritual. Not everybody's spiritual in their minds because spirituality and the definition of spirituality has been usurped by religion. Every time they think about spirituality, they see cathedrals, they see priests, they see pedophiles, they see Jim Jones, they see Jehovah's Witness at their doorstep. And they get repulsed by it. But spirituality is not that in this episode, FYI, okay? Religion and science, with a capital S, are two indoctrinated schools that have been created to satiate fear. So your atheist is hugging a science bear, and your religious person is hugging a crucifix or whatever deity belongs to their religion. They're doing this out of sheer fear of what's next after this world, out of sheer fear of what they are to this day. Anyone who gets very angry about debating their belief system is someone who's in an utter petrified moment of fear when it comes to their religion, of how they believe, of how their spirituality is connected to their mind, right? Your spirituality reinvention, I think a lot of you don't need any, quite frankly. If you're, especially, this is an hour in, right, roughly. If you made it this far, you're probably already spiritually enlightened. And this will be merely an affirmation of what you're already doing. Why would you reinvent yourself spiritually? Well, that's a big question, right? I think that obviously it's to make yourself more congruent with who you really are. But when you come to spirituality and you try to answer those questions, who you are, it's a lot different than saying, what do you want to do with your life? Where do you want to end up in your life? What themes in life do you want to have a part of your life? Most of us desire love. Most of us need love. And there's different qualities of love. If your mother calls you up and says she loves you, maybe that does it for you. But a lot of us, we like that love too. But at the same time, we really need someone that's more independently qualified to say it. Meaning, someone who doesn't have to love you. Your parents have to love you, sort of, right? It's just a constant of the universe that your parents love their children. So we like to gain love from friends, from people that we want to, you know, perhaps make our spouses or whatever. And that's where it becomes important. But bigger than those low-hanging fruit interpretations of spirituality, we have essentially the open-mindedness of spirituality, which is when you open your eyes, like I said, you see reality. And that's sort of the physical intake of your reality. And then you can, there's a second layer of opening your eyes, which doesn't require your eyelids to function. And that is feeling the spirituality of the universe around you. You can close your eyes and meditate. People close their eyes and pray to their gods constantly, right? Regardless if we want to acknowledge it or not, we are one with the universe. We are. Like Roy Batty said in Blade Runner, like tears and rain. That's us. Think about a tear falling into a puddle of rain. Well, for that moment that it is birthed from a tear duct, it has its own identity and its own form. It is born. And from the moment it leaves the tear duct and joins the rain, that's made up of the same unified substance, it has a birth, death, and perhaps resurrection. And it goes in an infinite loop. Most of everything that we see in the universe goes in an infinite loop, regardless of what it is, right? My advice for the spiritual reinvention is to make sure that you understand that you are part of a giant ecosystem of love, of consciousness, and to be very comfortable with the unknown that that's the case. You know, when we get inside of a roller coaster at an amusement park or any sort of ride, we don't understand how the whole thing's created unless we're the engineers that made it, right? There's always new rides that you didn't invent. And you get inside and you know you're part of a larger system. And you feel comfort. If you trust the organization that built the ride, Disneyland or something, you feel utterly comfortable that you're going on this amazing journey that has a beginning, middle, and end. You can ride it again if you want. And there's always something new. There's always something new in every single ride. I've ridden every single ride at Disneyland so many freaking times, besides the kiddie ones. But either you're reminded of something that you only think about when you're on this ride, which is funny. Oh yeah, there's the goat right there. Or you take away something more profound within yourself. As you're in the group think inside of a set of seats with a bunch of other people and everyone's screaming on that thing and we're all having a good time, you start to have this, what the Germans call the gestalt of the moment. This image of reality, of thought, right? And you realize, wow, young people get scared. Older people get excited. And there's always that lemon back there who doesn't want to be here, right? That stick in the mud. I want you to consider life very, very similar to that experience. Infinitely dense with opportunity to get to know yourself. You know, I wrote a poem once that was about, it's called Truth. And it was essentially a rhetorical poem about the fact that maybe because we are one facet of the universe, that either we will never know the truth because we are one particle in it and we can't objectively look at ourselves, or we can instantaneously find all truth because we are a part of the universe. You know, man is saddled with death, and time is our enemy, is what we are raised to believe. We try to hang on to our loved ones forever, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, maybe forever is not such a good idea, but we do try to deny the natural cycle of our mortal coils, which is that we are born, we live, and we die. Now, there's some folks that are starting to really get on board with assisted suicide. And I'm not going to go too much into that. But the idea is there is something beautiful at the end of life, as much as the beauty at the beginning of life. I think that suicide, whether it be physically assisted or self-administered, is going to rob that individual of the full experience of life. You know, a lot of us look in the mirror and we go, man, I can't imagine being old, you know, but it's going to happen. You know, my nose is going to continue to grow. My earlobes are going to continue to grow. Eventually, my skin will get wrinkly, probably. My body will no longer be what it is today. It'll be frail and weak. My eyesight will go down. My aches and pains will go up. Who knows what disease I get, if I get any at all. Maybe I just have a little bit of a brain fart and it's over one night. But I think the goal spiritually, especially in reinventing yourself, is to simply take your consciousness further than you've ever taken it, to consider things that you've never considered. And the only fear that I think that you should allow into your system when doing this is the fear of the unknown. But the fear that you have when you're riding a brand new roller coaster and you haven't done the drop before and you fear it. But you know in the end you're going to be okay. You know, law of averages. But I think one of the simpler ways to say the goal of spiritual reinvention is to gain peace with yourself. A functional peace. Now, at the same time, we don't want to lose our ability to be excited, to be thrilled, to be perhaps scared. Because those are the emotions that life brings us. Again, when I ask human beings to define heaven, they typically come up with probably the worst form of existence you could ever, ever imagine. Which is what the Buddhists figured out, right? Nirvana. A state of singularity. You are sitting there, and you've seen this happen as a joke, right? People sit there and smile as a joke, and they just never stop smiling. Like if you say smile to somebody who's upset, and they just fake a smile, right? And they just sit there forever, smiling. It starts to look really creepy, okay? And that's sort of the definition of heaven, is that we're on a massive morphine trip forever. And for any of you who have dabbled in a drug that made you feel wonderful, whether it be you had a physical ailment and you're getting it from the hospital or you got some illicit drug, you absolutely know that's bullshit, that you don't want it, that kind of reality. But that's what we're convinced we want. Sometimes, if you just go through the indoctrination of small minds, we need state changes. We absolutely need state changes. If you didn't need state changes, you wouldn't go on vacation. You wouldn't go to an amusement park. You wouldn't have any children. You wouldn't do anything. You wouldn't turn on your television because you wouldn't want a television program to differ from the last television program. You'd be sitting in a world with one color, one sound tone, and one feeling. That's heaven, as defined by man. Horrid existence. Hell by any other definition. We want things to be ever and ever infinite. Reinventing, which is why I'm a big proponent of reincarnation. Who knows if I come back as a human being? Maybe I'm that rose bush over there. Who knows? A totally different state of being. Only you know if you think you're closed-minded. Only you know if you're satisfied with your intake of perception when you open your eyes. But I can assure you, whatever you think you can see in your eyes, whatever you think you can feel in your soul when you open your eyes and experience the universe or some other human being within the universe or a pet or something, some living being, I think we all know that there's an infinite level more to be had. And that's the beauty of life. And quite frankly, that's the beauty of death. When we reach the end, we get to renew. We are in a better place. We renew. I know that that section is extremely esoteric, but what is spirituality besides esoteric? Nebulous. Hopefully some of this was handy. If you made it this far, your patience is unbelievable. I appreciate every single one of you. Again, we're trying to create a revolution that's so quiet that the ruling class never hear it. They never hear it. They just see an enhancement in consciousness, a lack of reactionism. We're always waiting for aliens to bring their promise to us, right? I got an episode about that. But they come down and they solve all the problems for us, allowing us to escape our responsibilities as human beings to create a beautiful world. Hopefully all of you, if you're stuck in this show, regardless if I'm touching on any good points, hopefully you're one of those people. And we're just going to be our own little aliens. Doesn't take more than 4% of the world to change the entire world. That's a lot of people. I think we got way more than 4%. If you haven't already, please go to mkultraradio.com. From there are all the links. If you're coming through video, there's audio. If you're going through audio, there's video. The website lets you go back on the audio as far as you want to go. This is episode 99. I just recorded 100 the other day, which is going to be the glossary to this entire thing. I'll probably release them extremely back-to-back here. Hopefully this fourth time is the charm for this particular episode. I got more episodes in the queue, so we're just going to keep going. Don't worry. I might redo the intro graphic just a little bit. Judging from the comments, none of you are pandering. You guys are being extremely insightful and kind to each other, and I just couldn't be more privileged to have created something where you guys come together, right? Because I feel like we're all cut from the same cloth. You guys say things that are so much clearer than I say. And so I like seeing the synopsis several times, right? I'll say this much. If you want to see the synopsis of a lot of the videos, read the comments of a gentleman. I think it's a gentleman. His handle is State Laughter. Just look for his comments. He will add a lot of great extensions to some of what's going on in the show. Anyway, that's about it. I'm probably running out of RAM space on this thing. I've got 3 videos stuck in this bad boy. This one's going to go out here fairly soon. Again, thanks for joining. Many more to come. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now. The disrespect in your eye. I can't control myself.